have a sheet, Pastor?
Yep. Lesson four, lesson four.
No, lesson six.
Lesson six, page four.
We'll share.
Lesson four, six, page four. All right, last time we're talking about the new creature, and it said, it's, huh? We're talking about the new creature in Christ. We said that it was regenerated, and they have a desire to know and follow Christ, and we went to the Ezekiel 36, 26, 27, John 27, and 1 Peter 2, 5. Now, I'd like somebody to tell me what it means to have a desire to know and follow Christ. What does that mean to you, whoever you are, that raises your hand? What does it mean to you, David? I'll volunteer you.
A thirst to live according to his word.
Okay, but yeah, but yeah.
But that's a good way of putting it, though.
It is a thirst.
Yeah, yeah. I like that.
As the pant, Psalm 43, as the heart panted after the brooks of water, yeah. Oh Lord, my heart panted after you. Okay, a thirst. What else?
I heard one preacher say he had new taste buds.
New taste buds. I like that. Yes, new taste buds. The old things, the old creature, the things of the old creature don't taste good anymore, or they shouldn't taste good anymore. What else?
Look for God in everything.
Anticipating God. In other words, somebody that belongs to God, somebody that's being indwelt by God, somebody that's facing the world with God should always anticipate God being in everything they do and everywhere they go. Mm-hmm. Period. Full stop. In everything they do and everywhere they go. And let me add to that, let me take that period out. And everything that happens, period, full stop. Mm-hmm. Everything. I don't care what it is. God is in it. There isn't one thing in this universe that God is not in, that he isn't the sum knowledge of it all. And let me just say that. If we were to sit here and think of the knowledge that we have, what does John say about if everything was written about what Christ did, how did he end that, Vinny?
The
world would not be able to contain the books, right? So our knowledge is so limited. Our right now, just as a second. Now, one of us in this room can tell us what's going to happen when we leave here today. We may have an idea of what we think we're going to do, but that may not even happen, huh? You may get in your car, turn the key, start down the road, and you have a flat tire. You got to sit there for a half hour. AAA comes, and then as AAA's doing your tire, you look at your phone, you see what time it is, you say, well, I can't do that anymore. You don't know what you're going to do. You don't know what's going to happen to you. When that phone rings, you don't know who's on the other end of it. You don't know what they're going to say. You don't know anything except what actually happens. You are living in real time, period, okay? God doesn't live in any time. He knows the beginning from the end. He knows every thought, every idea, every conversation, every event, every single thing we do, he knows. And what he does is he takes individual plans of all the things, of all the people in the world, saved and unsaved. He takes and he individualizes every one of those plans to fit the personality, the temperament, and the person perfectly. And it fits him perfectly. It may not feel that way. It may feel like, wow, why did I end up on this side of the tracks, right? Instead of over there. Why didn't I have a silver spoon in my mouth? Or why didn't I do this? Right? Well, it wasn't your plan. Mm-hmm. The biggest thing in Christendom today is that people fail to realize that God is sovereign. And that means that he has a plan. Otherwise, he could never have promised Romans 8:28. If he didn't have the plan, he couldn't say that everything in your life is going to work out for your good. He already knows what's going to happen in your life. Mm-hmm. Important stuff. Because here's why it's important. If you don't have a thirst for God and you don't have an understanding of God and you're not looking at God in everything, you're really, in a sense, living like a worldling. They don't have any hope. They don't know what's going on. They chaos. Well, I wonder what will happen tomorrow. Probably Murphy's Law will kick in or something, right? They're looking at all these different things that happen. We can be settled and comforted knowing that everything that happens is happening for a specific purpose for us. And we know that whether it's bitter or if it's sweet. I mean, if it's the greatest thing in the world, you meet the right person, fall madly in love, have bunches of kids, live happily ever after, then go home to heaven, that's wonderful. Whatever it is, he arranged it.
I heard you're doubting God's efficiency.
Yeah. Doubting God's efficiency. That's good. Yeah.
Our sister Diane yesterday, we were communicating via text, and she, the short of it is, you know, in New York City, what she's seeing, and she was reading out of Habakkuk. And so her response was, I may not know the future, but the Lord knows the future, and in Christ we trust.
Amen.
And so in our conversation back and forth, it was just, and that was her
ending.
What
we're talking about.
And that is exactly what you're just talking about. And confirmation, Diane.
So what I'm trying to say to you is, all of us have good things happen and we have bad things happen. We have them happen at appropriate times. We have them happen at inappropriate times. I can't tell you, if I could just speak for myself, I've had more things happen at 3 o'clock in the morning in the last 2 years than I've had in my whole life. I mean, I get up in the morning and I expect it to be 3 o'clock in the morning. And I wake up and I'm more tired than when I went to bed.
If you wake up at 4, you slept in.
Huh?
If you wake up at 4, you slept in.
Yeah, if I wake up at 4, it's been a long night. Right? And so for me, I look at that as part of a plan. It's a plan. It's something that's going on. Yeah.
I have a question to maybe take it a step further.
Okay.
It's about how do we know in our plan when things are happening in our life, if it's God's plan or Satan trying to kind of ruffle us, and where does choice come in there?
I know exactly what it is. Because Satan's plan is God's plan. Satan's plan is God's plan. In other words, if you read Job, he told the devil, take his family, but just don't put your finger on him. Then take yourself, everything that Satan does to God's children is ordained by God. Every spiritual,
how does our choice affect that? That's very
because your choice is already known too. Every choice you're ever going
to
make is already.
We don't have choices.
Huh?
No, you're making.
No, you
choice.
Don't have will.
Yeah.
There's no such thing as free will. Free will is an oxymoron. Here's the reason why. Every time when Adam and Eve came, they had free will. They were neutral. So that's why they had a free will. Okay. We're not neutral. When we come into the world, we're under original sin. If we get saved, now we're under God, and He even tells us, now I am your master, right? So there's no free will. There's always free choice. And free choice is within God's will, because your choice is always within God's will. Even when it's not, He permits you to step outside a little bit. If you wander away, He'll let you go so far, then He'll usher you back. He knows everything. See, that's the part to understand an omniscient God. He knows everything. He knows every conversation you would ever have in your life. He knows every person you meet. He knows how. Does it not say that I collect your tears in a bottle? It's a metaphor. But He's trying to show you in that metaphor just how important you are to Him. And isn't there another place where it says, I have engraved your name in the palm of my hand? It's another metaphor that says that's how important you are to God.
Christ on the sermon on the mount said that, you know, the sparrows are part of the crop.
Yeah.
The hairs of your head are numbered. He's trying to let the people know that in that time, with their limited understanding, that God is in everything. Satan can't do a thing unless God allows him.
Just agree.
And if He allows him, it's for an ultimate good down the road for you.
It was for Job's good?
The worst thing he can do to us is kill us. That's wonderful for
Well, not necessary. Some people would disagree. Some people
God
would say,
but
some people would say there are things worse than death.
Oh, if you're
right? Dead. I mean, I think of the hymnist that whose wife and two daughters drowned, and a couple days later he went on the beach and he wrote "It is well with my soul." Yeah. That's how we see, and that's a wonderful example. And even that, God knew he was going to write to him. God knew his wife and daughters were going to die. He knew he'd go back to the beach and write that, and we'd be talking about it in the 21st century. He knows everything.
The glory that came out of that to show the faith of the man.
Exactly.
It's affected the church.
And so what happens is when things happen to us, we become confused because we take God out of the equation. Listen, anytime anything happens in your life, I don't care if it's good or bad, if you take God out of the equation, there's a problem. You're going to have a problem. You're going to face a problem. Because it's God who created that situation. Wasn't you that did it. You made the choices to do it. And let me make that straight. You asked about choices. You made every choice in your life you made on your own accord. But, you know, they were always influenced. How many people here have felt God's, his breath? Just silent. Just a little. Just like that. And what he's doing is you're making the choice, but he's making it easier for you to make the right choice. Even if that choice hurts or kills, it doesn't matter.
You know, it's hard for a lot of Christians to believe that God causes all things to work for good.
Yeah.
Pleasure of his good will. Right. A lot of people think, how can that be pleasurable to God? You know, something like the Twin Towers be a pleasure to God?
Well, that's not a pleasure,
but it's all. Exactly. See, God sees a lot further than we do. Yeah. He sees the beginning and the end, like that's Christ right. was saying. Yeah. So he sees all of it. And it's going to be glorifying to him, too.
And I have to say something else. It's going to be in the sermon today, but I'll give you a little sneak preview of it. Every negative thing that happens in your life is positive. And the only reason it's negative is because you take God out of the equation and you put yourself in it. You have to understand that whatever happens in your life, God has ordained that it would happen. And he ordained that it would happen because he loved you. And he wants to mold you and confirm you, and he says in Philippians 1:29, it is given unto you to suffer for Christ, even as he suffered. And in another place it says, once you suffer as Christ suffers. Let me just say this. You know why Christians probably suffer more than those outside of Christ? You know why? Because they realize there is a God, and their sufferings have meaning, and they understand that. But it's difficult because they take him out of the equation sometime. They say, well, this is all about me. And it's not. It's not. It's always about God causing something to happen to strengthen you, to make you grow, to bring you to you're here, and whatever that tribulation is or that sweet thing, it could be something sweet. He's going to take you from there, and he's going to gently bring you right up there. And sometimes, now let me just ask you this. Think for a minute, if you will. Job lost 10 children, and he was in a transportation business. He lost all of his camels. He lost all of his donkeys. He lost all of his transportation. They killed his servants. They wrecked his family's house. They put him he ended up at the junkyard taking broken pottery and taking the heads off boils because his skin was being tormented. All of that. And yet he would not curse God. Why? Because he never took God out of the equation. Paul, shipwrecked, beaten with rods, beaten with cat of nine tails, spent a night and a day in the ocean, persecuted all over the place, rejected by his family, rejected by his countrymen, robbers, everything. He had to go through all of that. And yet he still says, it's not me who live, it's Christ who lives in me.
God got the glory too.
Yeah.
Because God gets the glory, but also he kept God in the equation. I want to tell you something.
You have to interject something in there, though. But you have to realize that when that was going on, there was a battle going on right between God and Satan at that point. Right?
Yes.
And Job's life.
But that's the theological depthness.
But he wasn't aware. We get a look behind the curtain. Job didn't have it.
Right. But what I'm saying is that's absolutely correct. But for a newer Christian's view, okay, without getting into the depth of it, the point is that those men and women, I mean, some of the things that women went through, those men and women never took God out of the equation, and that's why they were able to get through it. The only thing that separates you from an unsaved person is that you have God in the equation, and the very moment you take him out, then you're really no different than somebody who's lost, because they can't get comfort. They're so caught up in what's going on and how it's affecting them, they completely negate God. And when they do that, it's in a sense, their faith is your faith is always tested by everything that happens in life, good or bad. And in saying that, we have to understand that when that anything good or bad happens, we have to keep God in the equation. Sort of like Isaiah 26:3, "Thou will keep him in perfect peace whose mind is stayed on thee because he trusteth in thee." I remember I had some things going on in my life that were really, really just killing me. And I kept thinking about how bad I felt instead of thinking about God and glorifying him with whatever it is I was going through. And the only thing that got me through that and gave him the glory was that passage. "Thou will keep you," and I said it this way, "You will keep Brian in perfect peace because he trusts in you. And you said all things are going to work out for my good." So I'm hanging on to that, and I'm in very deep water right now. I can't see the bottom. I can't stand up. And I can drown. I can drown in sorrow, grief, whatever you want to call it. I need you. That was my prayer. And that's how you hold on to your faith. That's how you use your faith to get you through life. If you don't use your faith, it's only because it's not God isn't there. It's because you've taken him out.
That's the choice.
That's the choice. You choose to either suffer with him or suffer without him. And if you suffer without him, he's not going to come in and say, "Okay, get over here, you." He's not going to do that. "Get over here, you silly goose." He's not going to do that. What he's going to do instead is he's going to let you suffer for a while until maybe it gets to be too much, and then he'll comfort you, and only comfort you enough to bring you. You got to understand something. We want things fixed. We're fix-it people. Let's get something done. Oh, we got a problem. Well, let's fix that problem so I can go on and... You got to relax. In religion, you have to relax. You have to realize, I got a problem, but it isn't a problem. It's an opportunity. So I got to look at it as an opportunity so that he gets the glory and I get out of here with some growth in something. I want to tell you something. If somebody took everything you had right now, if they emptied out your bank account, if the bank closed the mortgage on your house and threw you out, okay, God would see to it that you made it. He would see to that in one way or another. And I would also remind you that 2/3 of this world don't have a refrigerator. They don't. And they're living. And living quite good. So we need to understand something. Most of the time when things happen to us, if it's an emotional problem, if it's a financial problem, if it's a mental problem, if it's a spiritual problem, whatever that problem is that we're facing, generally, not always, but generally, we're facing it, if we take God out of it, we're not facing it by ourselves completely, but we're dealing with it because we take him out and we put our feelings in place of him. And you can't make good decisions like that. You just can't do it. We should
say in Job too, when you're, he had religious counselors all along the way.
Yeah. Well, so-called.
Yeah.
Yeah. They were supposedly giving good advice, and a lot of preachers I hear, especially in independent Baptist circles, will quote Job to push something that his counselors were pushing. And when you get to the end of the book of Job, you see in chapter 7, after the Lord had spoken these words, and this is when he revealed what was going on to Job, he said, the Lord said to Eliphaz, the Temanite, "My anger burns against you," he's one of the counselors, "and against your two friends, for you have not spoken of me what is right." And it sounds very good. It sounds the advice they were giving Job. And so he said, he said, Job, he had Job pray for them. And then it says, "And the Lord restored the fortunes of Job when he had prayed for his friends, and the Lord gave Job twice as much as he had before." So he restored, that's a picture of heaven. Mm-hmm. You see, this actually happened.
Restoration.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's the thing we have to do.
Whatever he had before, you know. So because he was in a battle that he didn't know. And then most of, we don't know what's going on, and most of the time in our life, we're getting spirits. When he talks about warfare with demonic forces and everything, we're in the middle of a war. Christians don't think that. They don't think Americans don't, especially because we've got luxuries that people can't even dream of in a large part of the world.
So I want to tell you a good example of this. During World War II in Asia, when the American forces first went over there, they knew they were dealing with a formidable enemy. They were a member of the what do you call that?
Waffen-SS. Are you talking about Europe?
No, I'm talking about in Japan.
Oh, yeah.
They had that. They were a warrior race, and a lot of Americans went over there, and then they found a secret out. Their snipers would pick off their squad leaders, their officers, and the Japanese couldn't fight anymore. They couldn't fight without a leader leading. Unlike the Americans, you know, you take out the sergeant and a couple guys together will take out a pillbox. They don't care because we work together as a team, as a unit. Mm. They couldn't do that. They weren't trained to do that. And that's a perfect example of what happens when a Christian faces serious problems without God. You've taken out the cornerstone, and now you're left there, and you're trying to solve something, and what's really happening is that your emotions are really doing all the work instead of your logic. You're not biblically orientated to what's going on. You don't use Bible verses to heal the. Hey, if you go out and you go hiking and you break your leg, you're going to want to apply a tourniquet to stop the blood, to stop the bleeding. And that's what the Bible does. It is a first aid kit. It's something you use when you've been wounded, either spiritually or physically or emotionally.
And that tourniquet's pain.
Yeah, and you use it, and what it does is it gives you that comfort that you need. The whole point of this book, the entire point of this book, is to get you from your second birth to your first resurrection. That's it. That's the whole point. This book, before you're a Christian, you can't understand it, even if you read it. Once you become a Christian, from that point on, you understand it. Then once you die, it goes back over there again because you don't need it. So it's only now in this life. And what I like Christians to understand is that the whole purpose of having that book, the whole purpose of having faith in Christ, the whole purpose of having a God whose name is comfort, the whole purpose of having a God that is sovereign and omnipotent is to use him. You got to use him.
Think of also Corrie ten Boom and the concentration.
Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, they were infested with lice. But you know those lice, but they thank God for the lice. You know why? Because the lice kept the German guards out of the barracks.
Yeah.
So they were able to have Bible studies and people were getting saved in those concentration camps. And it was because of the lights. Mm. You didn't think of lights. You know, but
it's true.
A lot of stories.
So we have to
you read those testimonies. So that's why he says all things work together for good for those who love God, for those who are called.
So what we have to do is basically we just have to realize that we're gonna make a choice. Are we gonna go through our life taking God out of the equation because we feel bad about something or it's not working out the way we think it should, or are we going to leave him in there and say, well, Lord, I don't know what your will is for this, but I'll tell you what, I know you're on board, so I'm good. I don't care what it is, it'll work out for me because you're here and I'm in you, Jesus, and you're in me. How bad can it be? All right. Ron.
You cover both of it.
All right. Only faith has the power to please God and to energize all his blessings. All right. I just said everything I said. Let's look it up. John 6:28. Wow, that's pretty good. Talk about orchestrated, right? John 6. Wow. John 6:28-29. Let me get there.
That answers a very common question.
Anne Marie, 6:28-29.
Then they said to him, what must we do to be doing the works of God? Jesus answered them, this is the work of God, that you believe in him whom he has sent.
Okay, that's pretty simple. The energy that you need to get through anything in this life comes from God. If you just stop and think for a moment, think of what you did before God. even if you were religious, just think about all the things you went through and how many things that you actually, had the power to change, and how many of those things would have changed anyway through time. That's another key. I got to tell you something. We don't have a lot of capabilities of changing anything. We can't even change ourselves, because if we could, we would have done it a long time ago. But we don't. Can't.
Dave's having a charismatic moment over there.
David.
Yes.
He's hand raising.
Or is it Dilly? Who was raising their hand? What is that, a yellow jacket?
Yes.
I thought I got him, Jude. I've been wanting to do that ever since we played golf.
I know.
Stop dancing on the table there, David.
All right.
Now God sent that yellow jacket for a reason.
That was a yellow jacket.
Yeah, it's a yellow jacket.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just
the wickers.
It could be. Let's see. They go into pigs. They might go into yellow jackets. I don't know. It's kind of a small chassis for them, you know. All right, let's move on. How about the next one? Hebrews 11:6. June, I know you know that one pretty good. I know you know 11:5.
Okay.
Give me a second. Hebrews. Oh, no, that's not the same. Go ahead.
And without faith, it is impossible to please him. For he who comes to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of those who seek him.
Okay? Isn't that just what we were talking about? Don't cut God out of your problems. As a matter of fact, what you want to do is infuse more of him. Infuse his word in there. Brothers and sisters, help have them pray for you. All the things you can do to put God in the center of that problem is the best way of dealing with any problem. Otherwise,
you got a problem.
You got a problem. And it's really no. It's not that you have a problem, because that was put there. That was ordained. But you have the wrong attitude.
Not to interrupt, but I was wondering, even though Job had God, he still suffered.
He did. Okay. He suffered here.
Even with God in the equation, he still suffered.
That's part of it. That's the hope. In other words, we can't go through life without suffering. Some wise person said, we come into this world crying and we leave it crying. And it's really true. And so what we have to understand is that every bad thing what we consider a bad thing that happens in our life, every adversity, every temptation, every trial, that is an opportunity to grow. It is not a negative thing, it is a positive thing. And when we don't have that mindset, then we don't inject God in it. The only way you can put God into that problem is to look at it with the proper perspective. How many times have we looked at situations in life with the wrong perspective when we were over here? Right? How many times have you looked at a situation and you looked at it with one perspective, and then you walked away and maybe a couple days go by and you come back and, what was I thinking? That's not the way to look at it. We look at it like that. That's what you need to do. You need to inject the proper attitude. Nothing negative for a believer is negative. Everything in a believer's life is positive, including death. If death is a positive thing, then how could anything else be less? All that death is God doing this. Brian, you're up. That's it. Okay? So you have to remember that you're, and what did I tell you was the basic, the essence of our faith. What is the essence of it? Not Christ, not the cross, that is true, but there's an essence of it.
Obedience?
No.
Talking about attitude.
Attitude! Your faith is powered by God, and your part that you play in it, the works that you do the good works that you do is come to every situation in life with the right attitude. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what it is. If it's good and, you know, you open up the mail one day and you find out the bank made a mistake and they sent you a check for, I got one for $25 yesterday, but suppose it was $1,000. Have the right attitude about it. Take that $1,000 and say, well, you know what, Lord? You made that happen. I know I overpaid. It's just a little bit of a refund. But you know what? I'm gonna take Carrie and this side of the table. I'm going to take them out. And we're going to go to Arby's and we're going to get the meat. Okay? We're going to do something like that. That's the right attitude. To take the money and say, oh, no, I can't do this now. I'll put it over here. I'll save it and throw it over there for it. Relax. Relax. I'm telling you this. You know what it's like? It's like taking kefir. Once you start taking kefir, no, I can make an analogy out of that because it's a good one. You can take kefir and take it and let all that regenerative powers in your body get you through whatever it is you're going through, okay? And the same thing applies to God. If you don't take kefir, like I don't take kefir, I haven't got past the taste yet, but I don't take kefir, and because I don't take kefir, I don't get those benefits. Wink takes the kefir, and he can run up those stairs now instead of crawling like he did about a month ago. So the fact is, Wink's attitude is that kefir's good. My attitude is that I know kefir's good because I've heard a lot of people say it was good, but I'm choosing not to take it. Can I get any more basic than that? You know, he has. He really has.
There's kefir in heaven, you know.
There is? I hope not. I hope that water doesn't, that living water doesn't have the taste of kefir, that's for sure. All right.
You know, we should look at it because Avery's thinking of Job. And you have to read Job. You have to read one, I'm not going to read the whole chapter, but read one, chapter 1 through 2 and verse 6, because you see where what's going on there is Satan is walking to and fro upon the face of the earth. So when you're dealing with that, this is what's going on to some degree with every one of us. But this is specifically, and Job is a look behind the curtain for us, mainly.
Yep.
Job had to suffer, but you'll see where it says, you know, the pastor talks about the hedge regularly that's brought up. And when you read chapter 1, you should turn to it, actually, of Job, because we should read this. Not the whole thing, but it really is a good point there, because I know you're thinking about that he really suffered, and he did. And we've already seen the end where Job resort. It's in Job 1, and he was talking about the blessings of Job. Job had this and that, and so forth and so on, and all that. Then Satan answered, and
in 10.
Yeah, and you see in verse 9, it says, then Satan answered. Let me see, the best thing, from going, the Lord said, from where have you come? He said to Satan, because Satan came into the presence of God. Satan answered the Lord, I'm in verse
7.
7, from going to and fro on the earth, and from walking up and down on it. And the Lord said to Satan, have you considered my servant Job, that there is none like him on all the earth, a blameless and upright man who fears God and turns away from evil? Now, keep in mind, this is God setting Job up.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Job was doing good.
Yeah.
He was good. And so Satan could see this. And then Satan answered and said, The Lord has said, does Job fear God for no reason? Have you not put a hedge around him and his house and all that he has on every side? You have blessed the work of his hands, and your possessions have increased in his hand. But stretch your hand out. This is Satan, but stretch your hand out. He knew that God would be the one that would have to be the one to do that. He couldn't do it. Yeah. But stretch out your hand and touch all that he has, and he will curse you to your face. And here's the Lord said to Satan, behold, all that he has is in your hand, only against him do not stretch out your hand. Job wasn't aware of any of this. So when you read the rest of the chapter, when you get over to chapter 2, you see where that's where he killed everybody and all this stuff. And Joe didn't give in. When you get to chapter 2, it was another day. It said in all this, and it ends chapter 1, in all this, when you read all that chapter, see what happened to him right there. In verse 22, it says, in all this, Job did not sin or charge God with wrong. So then Satan gets a second shot at it. Chapter 2. So it was another day. Satan comes and pours himself, you know, presents himself before the Lord and said, well, you know, I still say he's no good.
That's verse 4.
Yeah, he says, and the Lord said to Satan, have you considered my servant Job? Now here's Job, he's lost all his possessions and everything. He said, have you considered my servant Job, that there is none like him on the earth, a blameless and upright man? So he passed the first test already. Who fears God and turns away from evil, he still holds fast to his integrity, although you incited me to destroy him, without reason. Then Satan answered the Lord and said, skin for skin, all that a man has, he will give for his life. But stretch out your hand and touch his bone and his flesh, and he will curse you to the face. And the Lord said to Satan, behold, he is in your hand, only spare his life. Keep alive.
Nothing.
You read
just
the rest of the book, it's all about Job standing. Right. Standing when there was no reason to stand.
I just want to intercede, one thought. So what those verses are telling us is here's Job going about his business. He was making offerings for his children in case they forgot. He had his business was going good. Everything was going good in his heart. Everything was good. But God instigated Satan or used Satan to cause him a very, very big problem. Big problems. Problems we probably can never understand. We say he lost 10 kids. Imagine just losing one. Well, imagine losing all 10 in one shot. Imagine the grief. His wife flipped out. That's why she said, curse God and die. So whatever problems we have in our life, if you compare it to what he went through and you see how he injected God, when he said in all that God did, Job never cursed him. In other words, he knew it was God, he understood it was God, and he kept God in his heart. Period.
See, that's why Hebrews 11:6 is so important. Faith is all important.
Yes. It's everything.
So that is believing that. Whatever.
That's how you know you have faith.
God is in it.
Yeah.
And he shows us our faith too with a lot of the tests.
Yes, absolutely he does. Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you, Wink. That was good. We're going to, we got Hebrews 11:6. How about 23 and 40? June?
By faith, Moses, when he was born, was hidden for 3 months by his parents because they saw he was a beautiful child. And they were not afraid of the king's edict. By faith, Moses, when he had grown up, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to endure ill treatment with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin, considering the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures of Egypt. For he was looking to the reward. By faith, he left Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is unseen. By faith, he kept the Passover and the sprinkling of the blood so that he who destroyed the firstborn would not touch them. By faith, they passed through the Red Sea as though they were passing through dry land, and the Egyptians, when they attempted it, were drowned. By faith, the walls of Jericho fell down after they had been encircled for 7 days, and so forth.
Okay, so here's the point I'm trying to make. If you read Hebrews 11, and you start reading about what people went through and how they got through it, you'll see that the common denominator is always faith. And what is faith? Faith is the attitude of injecting God into everything that happens to us. It doesn't matter what it is, up until including death. That's why there really is no tragedies for a believer, because they know that God has got a plan for their life, and everything's going to work out for their good. The unsaved cannot say that. That's the whole reason why. Well, you know what? I'm not going to give any more away because it's in our sermon today. So, with that, any questions?